Welcome to the Open Sources Digest. My name is Scotty Hertz, one of the co-hosts of Open Sources, a weekly political and current affairs discussion show produced at CFRU 93.3 FM at the University of Guelph. On this edition, co-host Adam A. Donaldson speaks to emergency physician and clinical scientist Dr. Catherine Varner regarding the ongoing crisis situation in Canada's emergency rooms and why the problems are likely to persist for the foreseeable future. This interview originally aired on June 29th, 2023.
Okay, Dr. Catherine Varner, thank you so much for hopping on with me today.
Hi, thanks, Adam, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's start by talking just sort of generally. When you're through, you know, the emergency department at your own hospital and you're talking to colleagues, obviously without, you know, naming names, but I mean, just in terms of the general feeling of, you know, when they come to work in the day or they're getting near the end of their shift and you know, they're looking towards next day, next week, you know, just what's kind of the general feeling of your colleagues when they're working these days?
I think the general feeling is exhaustion. You know, we've been in this for a long time now, you know, through the course of the pandemic. And then starting in about 2021, we started seeing essentially we're going back to our normal volumes in emergency departments because we saw a decrease in emergency department volumes right off the bat in the pandemic. I think people are afraid to come to the emergency department. They were also, you know, feel fearful of using possible resources that were needed in caring for COVID patients in particular. And so by 2021, and certainly by last summer, we saw a rebound of emergency department utilization. But on top of that, we saw a substantial amount of overcrowding that we had not seen at the same levels before. So what we're hearing across the country, which is evidenced by the open letters that have been written to media outlets from BC all the way to Nova Scotia, is that emergency department providers feel like they cannot continue to provide timely and safe care in waiting rooms and ambulance bays and driveways of their hospital because they have nowhere to see their patients. And so everybody's feeling really exhausted and overwhelmed now coming in a place in the pandemic where, yes, we're not seeing nearly as many COVID patients, thankfully, but we are seeing sort of a level of crowding that we've never seen before.
Yeah, this is kind of addressed in your article that we're kind of getting back to levels that of ER visits that happened pre-pandemic, but you are experiencing pressures in terms of like crowding, in terms of delivery of service that weren't there pre-pandemic. So I guess what is the X factor here in terms of you kind of have the same amount of business, but you just don't have the resourcing that you seem to once have?
Yeah, so we've always faced a crowding in Canadian emergency departments, and certainly at times where we saw peaks in influenza season. But I think the difference now is that we really feel the lack of acute care hospital beds in emergency departments. So Canada does not have enough acute care hospital beds to look after the patients that need hospitalization. And so what happens is patients who are waiting to be admitted to hospital have to stay in the emergency department for many hours and now, if not days, while they're waiting for that hospital bed to become available. And it means that when we have that much crowding, or what we call boarding, in the emergency department, we can't make space for new patients who are needing care in the emergency department. So that means that all of that care has to happen in unconventional spaces. Mm-hmm. So waiting rooms, hallway stretchers. In some cases, we're hearing across the country that patients are having to be seen in ambulances, which is, you know, not heard of before in emergency medicine. That's not how we're trained to provide care in an ambulance bay.
It sounds like the emergency department has become sort of a bottleneck, that the trouble is that the hospital can provide that care. It's just a matter of trying to get those patients from the ambulance bay into the hospital, that this is where it sounds like kind of a patient logjam happening.
Yeah, there are internal factors, which are the hospital crowding factors, and then there are also the external factors. So, we're seeing more patients than ever before that don't have a primary care provider, or don't have access to a provider in an urgent fashion for less acute concerns. So, it's multifactorial. We really see ourselves as that intersection in the healthcare system where a lot of the challenges, both in the healthcare system and in our communities as a whole, really come to a head. In the wintertime, we saw, the effects of homelessness in our major cities across Canada. And I would say even, suburban hospitals across Canada saw levels of patients needing care because they didn't have a place to go in the wintertime. And so we are always sort of the sanctuary of care for patients who need urgent care in our healthcare system and in our communities.
Another thing I noted in the article is there used to be a kind of like rhythm to sort of when ERs would be emergency departments. I'm still got my head around a 16 season TV show that ran 20 years ago, but in the emergency departments, you had these cycles. So, October's coming, influenza is around the corner, summertime, there's going to be more, traffic accidents and things like that as people are out and about. I'm wondering if there's a correlation, talking about the homeless people experiencing homelessness and the things they experience when they're, out in the cold or the increase of that population and sort of other factors, and also this sort of lack of predictability when it comes to these surge times. It's just that there are numerous factors that have led to sort of a, I guess, washed away those kind of predictable factors when you're in the emergency department.
It used to be on December 26th, we knew that that was going to be one of our busiest days of the year. It often coincides with the peak of influenza season. And it's a time when people have a difficult time accessing health care otherwise. So we knew that December 26th or early January was going to be log jammed in our departments. That was expected. We anticipated our staffing needs for that. We also saw peaks in summertime utilization as well. And people are doing things that they don't normally do. They get injured. Again, we don't have as much access in the summer months to other healthcare providers. And the challenge, though, now is that we're always working at 100% capacity. And so adding on even small deviations in how our communities and people within our communities utilize emergency departments makes a big difference. And so, we saw that in the cold months in our downtown hospitals with the population of people who found themselves homeless. We also see that now with the air quality that is poor. Today in Toronto, our quality is poor, and it's not going to cause a lot of people to come to emergency departments, but it will cause a small proportion of people to need, more care for their asthma. And so any of those small inflections now have actually a huge impact on our waiting rooms, because we're already in a bed crunch situation. And so we feel those fluctuations more than we ever have before because it's adding on to an already overcrowded situation. And it's pretty stressful.
And the things like the air quality, the smoke from wildfires, that is a new challenge. So it
Yeah.
speaks to that, there are sort of unanticipated things. You can base planning around previous events and things that happen with regularity, like the post-Christmas influenza rush. But there are things coming down the pike that we probably don't know how to deal with.
Yes, and emergency providers have always we've always considered ourselves, being very malleable to respond to the needs of our communities. And I think that's what's so hard for providers is feeling like you can't provide the care that our patients deserve and that our patients expect. And, I think that's been one of the most challenging things now, more than a decade into my practice, is hearing the disappointment that our patients express when they're on hour 20 in a hallway stretcher in pain. And experiencing, suffering that they they expected better of the
Right.
healthcare system for them. And you know, they first express understandably a frustration towards us, and I get it. I get where they're at. And then I find once they realize and looking around in the environment that we're doing the best we can, they express profound disappointment. And you know, I really grieve that for them because we are doing the best we can to try to make their situation better and try to make space and to provide the best care that we can in really difficult circumstances.
It bit of a shock because I think a lot of us don't know what goes on in a hospital until we're actually in one, and very few of us, knock wood, go to a hospital on a regular basis unless we work there. I wanted to approach this a couple different ways. First, I wanted to ask about human resources, like just people in the ER. If staffing is, I mean, obviously staffing is one of the drivers, but if we were to say, like, to give emergency departments a bunch of doctors and nurses, whether that changes the game. And then the second part is, we hear all the time from the Ontario government, they're adding beds. But what does sort of adding beds mean without the other piece of it of having the personnel to service those beds?
I don't think any of us have seen those beds materialize in a way that is impacting our day-to-day workflow. And then what I would say to staffing, you know, there's been a broad net that's been cast to try to increase the number of healthcare providers in the system, and I acknowledge that. You know, the challenges is that the hope is that some of them will end up in emergency care and providing emergency care. And you know, there are a few things that are limitations to that. First of all, it's a very difficult and untenable environment to work right now. So if you had an option to work elsewhere, you'd take it. And we're losing our most experienced providers in droves. And second, you know, to train someone, a nurse, to work in a triage position where they're quickly identifying who are the sickest patients in our department that
Right.
need the care quickest, most, you know, the fastest, is a skill that takes time and
Right.
experience. And so a brand new graduate cannot fill that role realistically. It takes time and training to put personnel into our, you know, most ex our roles that require the most experience. So resuscitation, triage, you know, and so, you know, it's this, all of these measures are going to have some impact, but they are going to take time. And I think that, we do, and I'm not in the position to create these solutions, but we do need to look at focused solutions at supporting and retaining our most experienced personnel in the emergency department. Because if we lose that 20-year nurse, or that 20-year physician, we are losing them at the prime of their career.
Right.
And that's the person that I want resuscitating my loved one. And to lose that person is a loss for the whole system. And as far as I can tell, we've done very little to retain those providers, and to make their work life more tenable.
When you and your colleagues are sort of sitting around talking about, what I guess kind of why you get up in the morning or at night if you're doing the night shift, to do this work and what kind of support you would need. I mean, if, Doug Ford were to join this call right now, I mean, what would you tell him that would, that would help you and your colleagues and make your jobs easier or at least give you some relief? What does relief look like?
Yeah, I think the practice of boarding, which is keeping admitted patients for days in emergency departments, should be seen as completely unacceptable. Because we know that the longer patients board in emergency departments, the worse their outcomes are. And there's published literature that supports that. And that is what really, in this moment, is creating the crisis in emergency departments. And so if I were to speak to, you know, all levels of health system leadership, I would have them look at the true pressure points on the system that affect boarding. and and which is what causes crowding in our departments. You know, and that there's not an easy fix, and I acknowledge that. And it's not one government. You know, this has been something that the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians has been writing about for 20 years and anticipating for 20 years. And so it's, you know, it's multiple governments over decades that have not paid attention. And now, as we see a population who is aging, that will require more emergency services as we go forward, we need to be thinking more proactively as opposed to being in a position of being reactive, which almost always creates Band-Aid solutions that have sometimes unintended effects that at times can actually take personnel away from the front line of the emergency department.
When you were talking about boarding, it almost sounds like there's a psychological component to this, that it's, you see that, it, you know, the so-called hallway medicine, you see people being left in waiting rooms or other sort of like ad hoc areas just waiting to be serviced. And it kind of has this, it has this sort of mental effect on you as a care provider, as other patients sort of seeing other people in the hallway, as you were talking about. I don't know if I have a question to this, but, you know, just the appearance of it has an effect of sort of, I guess, helplessness or hopelessness as you're just trying to deliver the care.
I think that observation is astute and correct. You know, to me and other providers in the field, it's inconceivable that it's okay in the emergency department, and it's not okay anywhere else in our healthcare system. And at a time, you know, patients, when they come into the emergency department, often they're having the worst day of their life. And so to park them in a hallway, or to say to them, you know, the only spot I have for you right now is this waiting room chair next to, you know, quite a number of other very sick people also needing care. It's really hard for them to understand, because it's not explicable, really. In a resourced country that we are, I find it inexplicable.
Yeah, and I think too, the onus has kind of fallen on the emergency departments to sort of catch, you know, all the other parts of the system. And I was talking to the former executive director of our community health center here in Guelph, and she was talking about how hospitals should be essentially big and empty, because we should be able to catch most people before they have to get to an emergency department. And so I guess how much of this, and maybe it's like obviously it's a multi-pronged thing, you know, we have to help emergency departments now, but we also have to buttress the rest of the medical, I guess, diaspora, right? You know, we have to have those, more of those family physicians. We have to have more of those community health centers and frontline nurses at those places as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm a trained family physician. I believe that if we have high quality primary care, which means access to comprehensive primary care that is multidisciplinary, then the long-term outcomes of our society are going to improve. I am a true believer in that. And investments in primary care need to happen now for the future. And are the team-based models of care, I think realistically in our system, are going to be what's feasible, because we have not replaced our family physicians at the rate that they are and will be retiring to be able to support the needs of our aging population, of our growing population, and their health needs. And so I think expanding the number of providers who can serve patients in a high quality manner, not just a one-off, oh, you know, I'm going to treat your pink eye type situation. People that actually anticipate the needs of patients and provide high quality preventive care.
You're in Toronto, so I'm not going to ask you to be an expert, obviously, on rural ERs, but I mean, there is that pressure too, and we're seeing, you know, news reports about whether it's ERs closing for the night or closing for the weekend, or in some select cases closing forever. There is going to be a blowback on urban hospitals, right? Because if there are fewer hospitals in rural areas, the next hospital over, whether that's another rural hospital or another urban hospital, that situation isn't helping, I guess. We're creating future problems just by not addressing the issues at those even smaller emergency departments.
Well, so certainly there's going to be a push to where those patients are going to need to seek care. It's not that they don't need to seek care in rural right. areas. That just means that they'll have to drive further and potentially put them at risk. And we've unfortunately seen that in news stories. But what I think our listeners should hear is that it's what doesn't hit the news is that large sections of large volume emergency departments close now on a regular basis. And it doesn't hit the news
right.
because we don't have to ask patients to detour to a different emergency department.
Right.
But when sections of large volume emergency departments close at night in particular, it means that all of those patients now are also in the waiting room.
Right.
We saw in an unprecedented manner, medium-sized hospitals, emergency departments closed last summer. We've never seen that before, in addition to the small rural sites. And that really disturbs our profession because we know that minutes matter.
Yeah.
And, particularly to those hospitals that are serving huge geographic regions in Ontario, that creates quite a bit of distress amongst emergency personnel, physicians, EMS personnel, you know, the whole range of providers.
Mm-hmm. And to revisit the psychological aspect of this, someone might be listening to this and think to themselves like, oh, you know, goodness, the ER is under so much pressure. Like I could be bleeding from somewhere and not want to go to the ER, whether it's because like, I think I can walk it off, so to speak, or I don't think it's serious enough to go and, you know, inflict myself on these poor doctors and nurses. But I guess for people listening and, you know, we're going into a long weekend, which is another one of these busy times traditionally for emergency departments, I guess, what do you want to tell prospective patients about what they can expect in the emergency if they have to go to the emergency room, and you know how you and your colleagues are sort of fighting these systemic challenges to give them the best care that they deserve?
Well, you know, emergency providers are experts at triage. You know, we spend our careers learning how to identify quickly the sickest patients that need our care immediately, mm-hmm. and also to determine who can safely wait. And, I would never expect the lay population to know how to triage. This is something that takes years to develop and to self-triage. So if somebody thinks that they need care in an emergency department, then they need to seek care in an emergency department and let us help triage the urgency of this concern.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in doing so, for those people that need emergency resuscitation,
mm-hmm.
I can tell you the Canadian emergency providers will do their best to provide safe and timely care to those patients wherever they can find the space. And that often means shuffling patients while we get a space ready and getting, patients into the space that they need to be cared for and getting their care going such that we can attend to their needs. And that unfortunately does mean those who have less urgent needs and less acute needs do wait.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would stress to people seeking care is just to please be patient. We're doing the best we can with the resources that we have. And, you would not be in this field now or have stayed in this field now if you did not care deeply for the patients who are seeking emergency care, you would have found greener pastures, you know, some time ago, because this is it is a tough job to work in right now. And those of us who have stayed care deeply for the outcomes of our patients, and we want to see the best for them.
Well, I think our listeners can hear that you do care deeply. And that's one of the many reasons why I appreciate your time today. So, Dr. Catherine Varner, thank you so much. And keep fighting the good fight for us.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Okay. And once again, that was Dr. Catherine Varner. That's it for this edition of the show. We hope you liked it. You can stay connected to us at our website at opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and we're on Twitter at OS_Guelph. If you would like to listen to our show again, you can download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite app at Apple, Stitcher, Google, TuneIn, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Twitter, and Mastodon. If you're joining us at our regular time on Thursdays, please stay tuned for Turtle Island Underground.
And that is one of the many great programs that you will hear here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. As for us, we shall return next Thursday at 5 p.m. for another edition of Open Sources. Happy Canada Day to those who celebrate, and we will see you next Thursday.